When Swamiji first went to visit Assisi, Italy, he went, as people do, to meditate in the what's called the portuncula, which means the little piece, little portion. And the portuncula is this very small chapel that actually sits now in the middle of this huge cathedral. But at the time of St. Francis, was a little broken down church in the forest. And when Francis was first called by God to leave his life of luxury and comfort and go out and live as a renunciate in the forest, he would go to that little broken-down church to pray. And one of the times he was there praying, Jesus spoke to him and said, rebuild my church. And Francis looked around and he was in a little broken-down chapel, and he took the obvious meaning from that, and he literally rebuilt the church. Later, he came to understand that Jesus had meant the whole church, not the physical building, but the whole mission. So that little building has been preserved, and Swami went to meditate there. I know many of you have been there, so you can picture it. And he said while he was meditating, he became conscious of Francis, and what he could feel from him, he said, was this extraordinary sweetness, a sweetness of nature that transcended what he'd experienced before. And Swami prayed, you know, what is the secret of this sweetness? And he felt Francis say to him, never judging, by being devoted to God, but above all, by never judging others. And Swami wrote that to us and talked about how much that meant to him. And, you know, in these 4 years since Swami's passing, and of course for 40 years prior to that, I've spent a tremendous amount of my energy and life trying to understand what makes Swami what he is, for the obvious reason that that's what we all need to become. And so the more one can understand how he did it, the more readily one can become like him. Just as he prayed to Francis, how did your consciousness become so sweet? And I was even also just contemplating that very thought of judging others. And how that resistance to the realities around us absorb and confuse so much of our energies. And there was always about Swami this remarkable clarity. Over the course of Ananda's history, he changed the names of what we did on a regular basis, not whimsically, but just step by step, as he was able to understand more deeply what was intended, he would bring it to a different focus. And so for years we had Ananda Publications. And then when he started writing the book, rewriting for the fifth or sixth time, the book about the nature of art and the role of the artist, art as a hidden message, it became. But there was an interim one called Crystal Clarity in the Arts. And when he came up with that concept of crystal clarity, he realized that that's what he was trying to do with all his writing. He was just trying to make it absolutely clear. And it wasn't a question of sectarianism or Ananda's publications or Yogananda's teachings or anything like that. It was just a clear window from where we stand in our own consciousness into the infinite. And before Swami died, and we had plenty of warning. We had no warning when he actually stopped breathing. He had a spasm, and 15 minutes later he was gone. So there was no long, lingering, you know, deathbed goodbyes. He just had trouble breathing, and then he stopped breathing. But his body was failing for many years, as part of the celebration of Moksha Day a video came from Assisi of him speaking in the very end of his life, a little vignette, a little section of what he gave. And I was so struck by how old and frail his body seemed. I rarely thought that when I was sitting with him, because his energy was so dynamic, and even his face would look startlingly youthful, almost childlike, as soon as the energy would begin to flow through him. He became the energy, which was eternal, and then all of the accoutrements of his own body just faded away. But seeing him on video, just sitting there, my, you were old. It just was sort of a little startling to see that. So naturally, and of course many people would ask, what will happen after Swami dies? Now we don't have to ask that question because we know. But one thing anticipated, has, I feel, has really come to be, and I think all of you, many of you will agree because you've told me. Even though Swamiji retired from his official position and let go of administrative responsibilities and increasingly paid no attention to the details of, certainly of Ananda. Even sometimes, I was joking recently, the woman who was his housekeeper and cook for many years, Leela, who was with him wherever he went. Toward the end of his life, he just started calling everyone Leela. Not literally, but it was just the most convenient name. And those who were in the room had to figure out which one of the Leelas in the room he really meant. I mean, he was just not paying attention. He would forget what country he was in. And I don't mean that he was age-related. He just would forget whether it was morning or night or India or Italy. It just didn't make any difference. It was all one flow of energy. So despite all of that, there was still such a powerful concentration of energy around and within that physical form, frail though it was. It was still, some people were more or less aware of it, all the threads of Ananda were tied there. And one of the things that for me personally was so confusing when he left his body was that I'd realized for all the years of my life, wherever he was, whether it was when I lived at Ananda Village and he was at his house or at the farm or in Nevada City, and then later moving here, and then when he began to live in three countries, wherever he was in the world, that was where the thread was connected. And it was so instinctive and had been so long-standing that when there was no place, physical place, for that thread to be, I felt rootless, I think is the actual word. And of course, I didn't see him. It wasn't like, I mean, he was distant from me from half my spiritual life. I didn't live where he lived. But there was still something about that incarnation that held it as a point of magnetism. And I also felt in a way, I said this before he died, in a way, he still held the creative keys to Ananda within himself. And I believed, and I believe it has happened, that when he let go of his form, it's like a tremendous amount of energy dispersed around many people. Or more accurately, I think it just dispersed into the infinite as a vibration that everyone, it's like a straight line for everyone who wishes it to just find that thread. It's like it's the extension of our own spine. That wherever there's a spine, it goes straight up. And of course, that would have always been true. But there's a change. When Jesus knew he was going to die, he said to his disciples, I've taken you as far as I can take you. I have to leave now. And when I'm gone, the Comforter will come and tell you things that I wasn't able to tell you. And you would think, why? I don't know why, but I do believe it's true. Swami even said to us once, which was a hard to accept, he said, those of you who never met Master in his body, in some ways it's easier for you. He said, because for you he is always an infinite spirit. He said, for me, I had that confusion of understanding Master as infinite, and at the same time he was dictating a letter in the room next door or going out in his car. And he said it was so hard to put those together. And Swamiji, because we knew him so long, he had so much of a personality and a persona for some of us, that to just understand him as the extension of our own spine, there's more of it. You know, and he talked in some of what we were listening to today about those who came and he had them teach, but then they thought it was their own power and they started teaching their own teachings, and the women who were editing, instead of correcting just the grammar and the flow, started correcting the teachings and just sort of, I too have something to offer. Swami writes in The Path, in the chapter on attunement, about how careful the devotee has to be to understand the right relationship with the wisdom of the Master, whether the Master is in person in front of you or in the infinite. And I'm trying to understand sort of what it is to work for God with our own creativity, to work for the cause of self-realization with all of our own commitment, and at the same time have that commitment run through our spine from the source rather than merely being generated by ourselves. And it's very, very subtle, because intuition plays a part of it. We try hard to be obedient. We feel we're being guided and we go with that guidance, and sometimes we are and sometimes we're not. Let me phrase it differently. Some guidance is more aligned and some is a fragment. But I think above all where it comes from, the kind of attunement that I think Swamiji would want us to have, I think begins with a tremendous respect for our own potential to serve, but for the power that came before us. And that was how Swami was. Certainly, he had creative initiative and willpower and discipline and just sheer energy. He just wore us all out. During the years I worked for him, which was in my first years, I mean, we would go to his house every afternoon, or 5 days, sometimes 6 days a week, at like 4 in the afternoon. That way there were no telephones, no cars, no email, nothing. We'd just walk over the hill to his house. He would have tea. I'd bring the mail. I'd work with his, when he was writing, I'd type his manuscript. Sometimes we'd leave. We arrive at 4 and leave at 4:30. Sometimes we'd leave at 3 in the morning. You never knew from that point on what was going to happen next. It wasn't like he kept us that late every night by any means, but sometimes it was 10, 11, 12, and then there would be the full day of work the next day. And Swamiji once referred to what he described. Sometimes he saw in my eyes what he called a look of desperate fatigue, is what he called it. I said, oh, did it show? He said, yes, at times it did. Just this tremendous necessity, because you couldn't, there was no taking a break when you were in his company, because his vibration never sank. And so you couldn't just be there and be kind of dull, like one spaces out a lot in one's own life. One always had to be, at least for me, at the maximum of my capacity to be aware, hour after hour after hour, if that was necessary. It wasn't even, you could be washing dishes, but there would just be this vibration. And I think that's what I'm actually trying to say. In order to be in tune with a consciousness like Swamiji's or a consciousness like Master, you see, we have to rise to their level. We have to be fully awake, honestly awake, and eager to serve, not the cause of our own satisfaction, but the cause of self-realization for all. You know, going back to St. Francis and Swami's sense of that sweetness, I was trying to really tune into what it feels like to have absolutely no judgment of anyone that you see. Just think about it, no matter who they are. And that judgment doesn't mean just critical judgment, but no judgment of Divine Mother for putting them in that position. No hesitation to simply see the world as it is and then ask the simple question, how can I serve? And be so aligned with one's own inner self upward into the spirit that it can just come. You know, and then the sweetness that Swami talked about is just Divine Mother's response to everyone. In the Festival of Light, Swami added that line that God loves us all equally. Not just Jesus Christ, Lord Krishna, and the great saints of every religion, but even those on earth who have sinned most greatly. That's what Swami was talking about with Francis. It wasn't Francis himself who magnanimously didn't judge. It was that Francis understood that before God we are all equal. So how can we lift or lower anyone? It's all the same. And then this realization that whatever, the only way to make our own lives matter is to align them with the life, world-changing power that we've been privileged to encounter in our line of gurus and in Swamiji. And it's no discipline then to be in tune. It's like, what else would I want to express? Having been fortunate enough to come in contact with this, why would I ever step outside of it? And when that desire is completely sincere, then attunement and intuition are automatic. It's not that we have to work hard to know what God wants. It's that we have to work hard to want to know. And that's what Swami showed us. From the beginning to the end of his life. He was there when he met his master. Master said, I love you unconditionally. Swami said, I will obey you unconditionally. And I believe from that moment to the end of his life, he always did. And I believe that the power that enabled him to do that is the same power now that can be ours. God bless you.